Imagine this for one moment, that we are one connection away from everything we want. One connection, it's not that far. If you imagine a mosaic, your piece is here and you're surrounded by other pieces. And one connection away from us is a whole nother world, is the rest of the mosaic. And if we follow any of those, or if those aren't working, we can shatter the mosaic, because it's not like a jigsaw puzzle where every piece goes in its perfect place and it can't happen without that piece there. A mosaic, every piece can go everywhere. So we can rearrange the pieces of our life. So if a certain thought is bringing us to a reality of a life that we don't want, we can change that thought. So what would happen for all of us if we change the initial thought that creates the words that we say, that creates the stories that we tell, that creates the life that we're stuck in? Would it bring us out? I don't know if it would. For you, maybe it would, maybe it wouldn't. Yeah, you have that right to decide that for yourself. But I at least want to turn your table over. And I at least want to say to people, what would happen if you just thought one different thought and you're one connection away from thinking differently? How could you find that connection? How could you find that different thought? And are you willing to make that change?
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Daniel, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Hey, Srini, it's so good to be here. I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
Yeah, you and me both. I know that we've made multiple attempts to record this conversation, and thanks to scheduling snafus and technical issues and a trip to India, that didn't quite happen. But I'm really thrilled that we're getting to do this at the very beginning of the year. So you having heard many of my interviews before, yes. I would like to start by asking you, what did your parents do for a living? And what impact did that end up having on the choices that you've made with your life and your career?
Fabulous question. I grew up in a lower middle class family. My dad was a salesman and he sold glass. And this was in the time before shopping centers were big. And he just landed a deal to put the glass windows in the King of Prussia shopping center outside of Philadelphia. And it was only shortly after that he died. Mm-hmm. And so we grew up in a family that my dad was someone who could care less about how much money was in his bank account, but how much love was in his heart was the most important thing to him in the world. And I became like my dad. It didn't ever matter to me. He was my idol. He was my teacher. He was my God. He was everything I looked to, but he died with a mountain full of debt and one black suit in his closet because he gave to everybody else even when he didn't have it. Mm. My mom was a secretary in a synagogue. And so she also contributed a little bit, but she was the type of mom who wanted to be home to make cookies and for us when we came home from school. So we lived in that Ozzie and Harriet. You may not even know who those people are, but in that Ozzie and Harriet lifestyle where we had a beautiful family where there was tons of love. The only thing that happened is they weren't around long enough for me really to enjoy them. My dad died on July 4th of my 13th year in this world, and my mom 2 years later on July 4th of my 15th year. Mm. Wow. So I lost my parents 2 years apart on the same day.
Wow. So when you saw the way that your dad died, you mentioned with a mountain of debt and one black suit. What decisions did you make about how you would live your life based on how he died?
So, fabulous. What was really interesting is when my parents passed away, I went to live with my mother's sister and her husband. And we didn't know them very well. We were in Philadelphia. They were in Kansas City, Missouri. And the change from the East Coast to the middle of the country was small in comparison to the change of the economic plateau that we were in to the one that we were going to. My uncle was a household name. He was R Block of H&R Block. And so I went from a lower middle class family to one of the elite families, and certainly in Kansas City, if not in the country. And he looked at me and he said, I see in you the ability to start at the bottom pushing a broom and over time to take over my company. I believe you will be in my seat because I don't have any sons. And it was in a time, it sounds crazy to say it, but it was when men did not give their companies over to their daughters, they gave them over to their sons. And he didn't have any sons. So he saw me as the opportunity to continue his lineage in the company that he had started.
Wow. Do you have children?
Yes, I have. I have a 29-year-old developmentally delayed daughter.
Wow. Having lost your parents at such a young age, I wonder what impact that has had on the kind of parent that you've been.
Oh, gosh. You can only imagine. There is no greater pain than losing your everything. I mean, my dad was my everything. I love my mom too, but my dad, we would walk down the boardwalk in Atlantic City, which was then a bigger place to go, and I would hold on to his ring finger, and I was 4 years old. But the way we walked was the same way. I had the same sort of gait that he had. And people would just turn around and look at us because they would say, I was the mini me before there was a mini me around. And losing him shook my entire world. I lost everything, every connection that I knew of to things that were good in my life, I lost. And it's no wonder now that I am working with people to help them reconnect to a world that they're disconnected from. We live in the most connected time the world has ever known, but we're more isolated and alone than we've ever been. And partly that's because we're disconnected from ourselves. And I realized my disconnection, it completely changed my world. I realized that I was searching my whole life for the place that the adults told me was where my parents were, which was a place called heaven. And I had no idea where that was. So I walked away from the opportunity to run H&R Block. I walked away from an opportunity at Hay House that I helped them grow, a publishing company where I helped them grow from $3 million a year to $100 million over the course of 10 years in sales. Because that wasn't the heaven I was looking for. I was looking for that place where my mom and dad were, that I could reunite and reconnect. And I think all of us, maybe it's just my own particular journey, but I think all of us are looking for that place where to reconnect to that place where we initially disconnected from, to reconnect to who we are and what we are. Let's pause there for a minute and see where that takes you and your question.
You know, the funny thing is, I realize, and I wrote about this a few days ago in a post in our blog. It was, you know, a piece titled "On the Time We Have Left with the People Who Matter Most to Us." And I've said that this is something that we take for granted. This is something that we squander and we spend exorbitant amounts of time. So I think part of what prompted me to write that was there was a Spanish video, the viral campaign thing that went viral, and it was for a liquor brand. And the premise of it was basically they would bring these people into a room together. They had a gay couple, a mother and son, a couple of best friends, and they would basically tell them, say, hey, you know, by the way, based on statistics and data, we can actually calculate how much time you guys have left to spend with each other. Would you like to know?
Wow.
And you can find this calculator online if you look for it. But what was shocking was how little it was. You know, people thought it was years, and it ended up being days. I see my dad once a week, and the total time came out to 23 days is what we have left.
Yeah.
And wow. Yet, you know, we spend literally you'll spend something like 500-600 days of your life staring at screens, browsing the internet, doing all this other stuff. So the reason I brought that up is because I wonder, when you're so young and you lose both parents, how at that age do you process and navigate grief? And how has your perception of the experience changed with age?
Gosh, huge, huge, great question. Deep question. Great question. I think I did what everybody else, what I assume other people do, is it was so overwhelming for me at that point. Either it would roll me over and destroy me, or I put it into a room that I didn't even want to look at. I took my grief and I said, this is just too big for me to even comprehend. So I'm going to just go numb. I'm going to build a wall around myself to protect myself. I'm going to silo myself in that protection. I'm going to paint around that wall to make people think that when they see that wall, it's me, and to have them believe that they're seeing a beautiful version of me. While all the time, really what was happening is I was sitting quivered up in a fetal position, crying my eyes out, wondering, why did I lose? Why would this happen to me? And why was I now suddenly so separated from a world that I knew? None of my friends had lost their parents. I was so different from everybody else. And I saw what it caused me to do is see a world that was so completely the opposite of the world other people saw. While other kids were out running and playing, I was wondering what had happened. Why me? What was going on? What was this meant for? And it was Independence Day in America. It was Independence Day. And I thought, oh God, that means I have to be independent. But it was only in writing my book, The Mosaic, that I realized that we are not meant to be independent. We're never meant to do this alone. We can't do things alone. In fact, when we do things together, it's so much more valuable and we can do so much more. And the things that we can actually see when we come together is so much greater than the things we see on our own. But for 60 years, I lived with the message of my parents are trying to tell me to be independent. Until when I wrote The Mosaic and I sort of found that place, that heaven that I was looking for, when I reconnected with them through the writing of that book, what I realized is I had gotten the message entirely wrong. What they were saying is, don't be, independence means death. When you cooperate with other people, when you work together with other people, when you build things together, that's where life is. So it's a huge revelation for me, and it only came in the last few years.
And it's such an interesting message in a culture where we have such a high level of individualism. And you know, a couple of months ago, and most of you will have heard it by the time you're listening to this, we had an interview with a guy named Will Storr who wrote a book called How We've Become So Self-Obsessed and What It's Doing to Us. And yeah, what you're talking about is such a contrast from that.
Yeah, well, it really comes, Srini, it comes down to this for me. We have experienced, let me not say we, because I don't mean to papalize this or make this a teaching. Let me talk from my own personal experience. The pain that I've gone through in my life has made me want to protect myself, because who wants to experience pain? So I've created these walls around me and these silos that have isolated me. And I started to wonder why I don't feel the fulfillment in the connections that I am having, because I have great friends and I have good connections. But how can I have great friends and good connections when my silo is meeting your silo, when my wall is meeting your small wall, but I'm not letting you behind that wall and you're not letting me behind that wall? And so the connections we're having are silo to silo, not person to person. And that leaves us empty, because our whole life we're taught, in order to be successful, copy what this person's doing. Do these things. We're sold day and night, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're sold things to make us happier or more successful or feel better or look better. No one ever tells us, hey, why don't you just be yourself? Like, don't go outside of yourself. Go inside yourself. What's inside you that is, what's your passion there that just can't, that keeps you awake at night? What happens when you connect with that? And when you connect with that, Where was that given to you from? How does that work? And how do you use that to connect with other people who have passions that are similar? They don't have to be exactly the same passions. They don't even have to agree with you. But when people of passion come together, whether they're of like mind or unlike mind, they create passionate situations. And that's what's missing. We have passion, but we have all our passion is spent from silo yelling at silo that we're right, you're wrong, we're right, you're wrong, we're right, you're wrong, because we're so insecure to allow somebody else in. Does this make sense what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does. So you mentioned building walls, and I think that this is something that I've experienced firsthand. And so I wonder, how you would deal with this. So I think that I know myself well enough to know, particularly when it comes to the context of romantic relationships, that when I've been hurt, my instinct is to start building walls.
Shut down.
And not let people get too close. Like, I don't save the phone numbers of people that I go on dates with anymore.
Yeah.
Mainly because it allows me to basically, not be nearly as attached to them if it doesn't work out, because they're just a number, not a person. And part of me is like, wow, that is kind of sick, and it's abstraction and sociopathic behavior and a wall. So I wonder, how do you prevent yourself from building walls when you've been disappointed and when you've been hurt? Because those are inevitably things that are going to happen. We don't go through this life without getting punched in the face.
Totally. So my approach, and it really is the first practice of connection that I've been given by the Mosaic, is the practice of being kind to myself and being kind to ourselves. When we're so hard on ourselves. Like if we listen to the way people explain their situations, most of the time we hear people in conflict with themselves. And I don't mean to, if I'm saying something that's inappropriate here, please, I'm sorry. I mean it with all the love of my heart. But I know that pain that you're talking about. But instead of trying to say, how do I stop doing that? My approach is, how do I be grateful for the walls that I've built up and the thing and what it's done to help me? And how do I allow myself in my gratitude to the protection it's provided for me from the perceived threat that I believe is coming? How do I love that wall so much that I say to him, I don't need you right now. Please stay close because I may need you again. But right in this minute, let's see what happens if I can just drop this wall. Let's see what happens if the pain that I perceive, maybe it's not as great as I perceive it will be. And maybe it's actually more beautiful than the pain of me living in these walls that just suffocate me and kill me. Because I'm safe in here, but I have no life. I have no connection. And I don't mean to get this personal, but just because you mentioned the story, let me just use that and then come back at me, because I'm not saying you're doing anything right or wrong. When we can't trust that the people we're meeting are here to benevolently help us to learn how to love, whether that's in a business relationship, in a romantic relationship, with our spouse, with our kids, with our own self, then we have no chance to go beyond that. What if instead of thinking these people will probably hurt me because I've been hurt before by situations just like this, think, how did I walk into this situation, and how can I walk into this situation with all the love of my heart so that I can now embrace whatever pain there is here, that I can be compassionate to myself, that I can allow that pain to come into this space that I'm going to hold for it, so that I get it out of myself and into this holding space outside of myself, so that I release that from my being instead of holding it welled up in the walls that I've created. I'm not sure that I'm saying it clearly enough. Is this making sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I mean, it's the kind of thing that I think that when people like myself ask questions like this, I think often we live in a culture of silver bullets and sound bites and life hacks and productivity hacks. And I realize this is not one of those questions that can be answered with such an answer. So yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things that requires a lot of deep reflective thinking. which I appreciate.
Yeah, but I want to so admire your honesty to be able to say in front of thousands of people, this is a real situation, because so few people talk about real situations. And I don't want to answer it. Like, my job in the world that I live in is not to answer questions as much as to question answers. And I think that when we start to question some of the stories that we tell ourselves, I have a theory for change that I follow in everything that I do. And it's so simple that I don't understand why the world doesn't practice it on a day-to-day basis. Our thoughts become our words. Our words become our stories. And our stories become our life. So imagine this for one moment, that we are one connection away from everything we want. One connection. It's not that far. If you imagine a mosaic, your piece is here and you're surrounded by other pieces. And one connection away from us is a whole nother world, is the rest of the mosaic. And if we follow any of those, or if those aren't working, we can shatter the mosaic. Because it's not like a jigsaw puzzle where every piece goes in its perfect place and it can't happen without that piece there. A mosaic, every piece can go everywhere. So we can rearrange the pieces of our life. So if a certain thought is bringing us to a reality of a life that we don't want, we can change that thought. So what would happen for all of us if we change the initial thought that creates the words that we say, that creates the stories that we tell, that creates the life that we're stuck in? Would it bring us out? I don't know if it would. For you, maybe it would, maybe it wouldn't. And you have that right to decide that for yourself. But I at least want to turn your table over. And I at least want to say to people, what would happen if you just thought one different thought and you're one connection away from thinking differently? How could you find that connection? How could you find that different thought? And are you willing to make that change?
Wow. You know, earlier in our conversation, you mentioned that your mother was a secretary in a synagogue. So I had to ask, what, if any, were the religious and spiritual upbringings and messages that you received growing up?
My dad was an Orthodox Jew, and my mom was a Reformed Jew. So we grew up pretty confused. we grew up with religion as a cultural thing, not a spiritual thing. But when my parents passed away, I thought, God, the adults told me my parents are in heaven. Who speaks of heaven? Religion speaks of heaven. So I set out in search for India, to go to India to find a teacher to help me understand the ways of the world. Along that journey, I got sidetracked in Israel for 5 years and was one day away from being ordained a rabbi, and I left because I couldn't follow the doctrine that the Orthodox Jewish tradition gave, because I still believed in a more Indian approach to life, which is God exists in everything and in everybody, and there's no one way that's right. The only way that's right is if you love him. And so it definitely influenced me, but not in the ways of going into the organized religion that I was born in. Even though when I came to Israel, they said to me, I met a very sacred man there. And he said, I have one question for you. Why were you born Jewish? Were you born Jewish to become a Hindu? Or were you born Jewish to understand Judaism? And I had to stay with him 5 years until I could give him the answer to that question.
Wow. So one thing that I think is really interesting is you had the sort of drastic contrast of a father who died in a mountain of debt, and then, you know, a family who had, you know, really what seems to be the kind of wealth that would sustain itself for generations.
Generations.
And, you know, and I only know this from having seen some of the documentaries on Johnson & Johnson, that the family that, you know, had the Johnson fortune. And, yeah. You know, I wondered, One, what are the things that you learned about money and wealth from each of those perspectives? What are the messages that you got, and how did they shape your decisions early in your life, and how have they shaped them now?
Beautiful. My dad taught me to live life the way you want to live it, and it doesn't, don't give a damn what anybody else thinks or says. If it's in your heart to do it, just do it. My uncle taught me so many things, but the thing, unfortunately, that I probably took away from it that has shaped my life more than anything is when I sat down with him, he asked me, are you going to take me up on my offer? And I said, I need a year to watch you. And he said, do you know 99.9% of the people in the world, if I told them that I was going to start them pushing a broom and that 10 years later they were going to be sitting in my seat, would have said, when do I start? Where's the broom? And I said, just our rotten luck that I'm the 0.00001%. Because you've had 3 months to watch me to come to this conclusion for yourself. I would like to take a year to watch you and see what I'm walking into, because I don't know this world. And at the end of a year, it sounds easy because we're talking in a story right now that is easy, that's following 1 year later as if it was just moments later. But 1 year later, he said, I'm going to pick you up from school today and we're going to go out to lunch. I'm going to actually take you out to lunch. I'm going to have you leave school early. And we went to lunch and we sat down. He said, so do you have an answer to my question? And I, being the smart-ass kid that I was, said, you have to ask me a question first. He said, oh, did you forget the question I asked you 1 year ago? And I said, no, I forgot. I only forgot that today was 1 year later. But I promise you, I will never forget that again. When you give me a date, I will honor that date. He said, so do you have a question? I said, yes, I do. But my question comes in the form of three questions. And he said, okay, tell me what those are. I said, I remember in the summer you had a birthday party, and you had over 250 people at our house. And I remember coming up to you and saying, God, how beautiful this must be to have this many friends, to have this many people who love you and care about you and come here and want to celebrate your birthday with you. What a special day this must be for you. And I said, do you remember what you said to me? He said, yes, I do. I'd say it to you again today. I said, I'm going to paraphrase it and you tell me if I'm right. And he said, go ahead. I said, what I remember from that story is you telling me none of these people are my friends. If tomorrow I would lose all my money, no one would be here at my party. They're only here for one reason, because I have money and they want it. And I said, and I said, is that right? He said, yes, that's exactly right. I'd tell you the same thing today. And I said to him, then why would you want to give me that gift? Why would you want to give me the gift of believing that nobody gives a darn about me? They just are interested in me because I have your money. He said, okay, I see where you're going. What's the second question? I said, the second question is, I remember when we were sitting at dinner one night and your daughters were starting to get serious with boys. Do you remember what you said to them? Excuse me. And he said, yes, I do. And I would say, I say it to him every day still. And I said, again, let me paraphrase and you tell me if I'm correct. You said to them, you know, you're not that attractive. You're normal looking girls. You're not beautiful. You're normal looking. So you have to know any boy that's interested in you is interested in you because of your last name, not because of who you are. And I said, is that right? He said, well, Danny, you know, I have to believe that. And I said, okay, so say that I would be able to get over the first question. Say that I would be able to make real friendships with people. Why would you want to give me that gift to my kids? Why would you want my kids to have that gift? And he said, I see this isn't going so well. What's your third question? I said, my third question is, if I were to start at the bottom and push a broom and come to the top and have ideas of how I could help the company grow, because I've seen it from inside out and I've seen new possibilities and new ways of doing things and new directions, because you're really innovative. He bought CompuServe when it was the first internet company out there. He wasn't a conservative, not innovative man. I said, if I were to have that vision and I were to see new things that I could do, would you give me the space to do that? And he said, Danny, if something isn't broken, why would you try and fix it? Just do the system, know the process. I said, Uncle Dick, does it seem to you that we have the answer to our questions? He said, yes, it does. And I'm sorry for you, and you know what has to happen now. I said, I think I do, but why don't you tell me? He said, I have to gently ask you to leave our family because you obviously have rejected what we have come here to give you. So I'm going to ask you to leave. And for all intents and purposes, you're excommunicated. And I looked at him and he was expecting me to be mad at him or unhappy. And somehow as a 16-year-old kid, I said to him, I can't thank you enough for who you are and the opportunities you've given me. I would have never had a chance to see the world like you've shown it to me. And I so respect you and so honor you. And I want you to know that even though I'm not in contact with you, I love you. And I'm so thankful to you for all that you've shown me. And so over the course of years, what's happened is I've had this thought in my head that people who have a lot of money also don't have the charmed life that we believe they have. They have a lot of something, but there's something really unfulfilled inside themselves that doesn't allow them to connect to people in a way that's meaningful and rich because they always think people want something from them. And I see it even in the world that I live in. I have friends that call me up and say, well, you've got to get on this MLM that I'm doing, or you got to get a part of this program, or you have to hire me to help you do this. What's happened to just being friends with each other? What's happened to just loving each other and not selling each other? I'm so tired of people trying to sell me things and sign me up for a program or sign me up to prosper them or sign me up to do something. Why can't we just be friends? Why can't we just listen to each other and love each other and hold the space for each other to figure things out on our own? Does that answer your question?
Yeah. I'm getting chills listening to you talk about this, so I just didn't want to say anything. What did you do after? Where did you go? How did you get from there to Hay House?
So I went to university and I studied psychology because I thought I got to find the answer to why this little innocent kid would leave his parents would die, why he would go from a lower middle class family to one of the elite families in the world. Like, what in the heck is behind all this? And I took all of my undergraduate psychology courses in 2 years so that I would have a degree in psychology. But I found that it didn't answer the questions that I had. And so that's when I left school. I dropped out of school after my sophomore year. So I did 2 years of college. At 17 and a half, I put my thumb out on the road and started to hitchhike around the world. And I spent about 6 years hitchhiking around the world. I went to seminary during that time in Jerusalem, Israel. That's when I left there. I went into religion to see if religion had answers. Religion didn't have answers. I went to yoga to see if yoga had answers. I spent 20 years, 10 years as a monk in a monastery, in a yoga community, being a monk. And then 10 years as a householder, as a married man, running businesses and working in companies. And still I didn't find my answers. Because the premise of what I was trying to do was a belief system that I had to do it on my own because I believe my mom and dad died on Independence Day to teach me independence, to teach me don't count on the world around you. You can't count on the world around you. And it's really only in the last 3 years that I found my purpose and I found my peace, which is the building of this mosaic, which is helping people see we're all parts of something much greater than we are. And it's in the coming together with others that we accomplish amazing, spectacular, beautiful things that we never even saw possible when we were standing on our own. My premise was wrong. And I don't beat myself up for it because it taught me so much I fought so many battles with the belief that I can do this. No matter how many times I get knocked down, I can stand up again. No matter how much I do, I can always get up. I. But I went, you know, my ego eye went to I of a Jewish I. Like, what in the heck am I doing, right? It's so much easier to just ask somebody for help, to just be vulnerable enough to be open to say, this is what I need. This is who I am. This is what we've come for. How can I help you? How can I give you what you need? And how can we help each other grow and prosper together? And so what it's made me see is the paradigm of the world we're living in, which is a vertical paradigm of I know and you don't, and so I'm going to teach you, or I'm going to help you, or I'm going to fix you, is deteriorating. And there's a new paradigm that's a mosaic paradigm where just all of us coming together find answers to things that we never saw possible. I'm sure you're aware of swarm intelligence, right? Mm-hmm. I believe that's the new modality. When you look at birds fly, they don't have a leader. They just all fly in sync with each other. When you look at the way fish swim, same thing. And there are people that are doing work with swarm intelligence where they just have 60 different people in different parts of the world with a mouse that and the ability to move something on in the middle of a circle with answers around the circle, and none of them know the answers. On their own, none of them would predict that the answer that they landed on as a group would be the answer that they would choose, not one of them. But the answer that they choose is the right answer. There is something that we don't see yet because we're so caught in just seeing our own ego and seeing and defending ourselves and living in our silo of pain. That when we dissolve that, when we get out of... Look, I'm a proponent of like-minded communities. I love them. It was so important to me when I was a lone wolf to find other people of like mind that I could be a part of. But like-minded communities that once saved me are now destroying the fabric of what I believe is our reality. Because those like-minded communities have become silos that are getting bigger and stronger and wider and deeper. And the gaps between them are becoming larger and deeper and fuller. We are just sitting on sides of the fences yelling at each other, saying, we're right, we're right, we're right, we're right. It's time for us to melt those silos down, to come together as like and unlike minds, to listen to each other, to hear what possibilities would exist if we would only allow each other to influence each other.
Wow. So I wonder, you're at Hay House of all places, which is really a breeding ground for ideas and things that move us forward as a society and things that change our perceptions of what's possible in our lives. How much of you know, your own perspective was influenced by the work that you did there and the people that you were exposed to there? And how did you take what was useful and relevant to you and discard what wasn't?
Yeah, beautiful. You're so good at what you do.
Thank you.
you ask such good questions. So I was at Hay House for 10 years. I came when they were a $3 million company, and I left when they were doing $100 million a year in sales. What I saw is even the people that are changing millions of people's lives, behind the facade of who they show is a person that has a lot of pain. And so often I would say to people, it's time for you to read your book again. Your book is changing millions of people's lives. Read it. Just sit with it again. Allow it to influence you again. And what I found is there are a few people. I mean, there's some saints that have come into this world that have written the book that they want to share a vibration and a story and a feeling with the world that's their vibration, and it does that. I can think off the top of my head. I followed Yogananda, Paramahansa Yogananda. He wrote a book called Autobiography of a Yogi, a must read for anybody. And in that book, you just are absorbed, not with just the words that you say, but the space between the words, the vibration of the book, and it changes you to just read it. But most people write the book that they most need to read. And when I would see time after time after time after time again, that I would say to the people, they were my friends because I didn't want anything from them. I would never say to everybody else was, "Woo, woo, what can you do for me? How can you help me?" I was doing my job. My job was to help them be the best they could be. And I never asked anything from them. I remember sitting around the table at dinner with a celebration of our authors, and every single one of them said around the table, "There's one person here we want to help." And none of them said the name until at the end they had must have talked about it before. They said, "Danny, it's you. You have never asked us for anything. Everybody else has asked us for something. Why won't you let us help you?" And I said, "It's not my job to ask you for your help." So there were two things I saw in that: my lack of vulnerability and my desire to just give. But my lack of vulnerability, I don't want to lose, because here were people who were top shelf people that just wanted to help me. But I wouldn't let them in. And so part of what I've learned now as I go into life is, how can I be more vulnerable? How can I bring down those walls that I have around me, where I have to be the one that's always the right one, the good one, the strong one, the white knight shining in armor who rides into the room and says, "Get out of the way. I'll take care of this for you." And how do I just allow you, Srini, right now, to see the little boy scared to death, hiding behind his wall, that might not be good enough, that just might not be enough, that might not be able to help you, that might not be all that you want me to be? And I sit with that boy now, and I just, instead of hiding him and being ashamed of him, I just hold him in my arms and say, "Look at the man you've become. There's some things in me that you'll love, there's some things in me you won't love, but look at the man you've become. I'm proud of that man. And I want you to be proud of him too. And help me to make this man a better man." Connection. Everything in life is connection. I'm talking now about connection to my own little self. I'm talking now about a connection to vulnerability. I'm talking now to a connection of a premise that led me in one direction. And when I changed the premise that I was following, my whole destination changed. It's all about connection, and that's what the mosaic is. It's a simple fable. It's a simple story. And the story, you can read it and enjoy it. It'll take 2 hours, 3 hours to read. It's just a simple, simple story. But the real story only starts the moment you finish the book. And the moment you allow the mosaic, the connectedness of life, to change you, to enter you, to lead you in places that you would never go before. The things that I'm talking about, I don't write about in my book, but when I read it again, every one of them is hinted in it that I didn't even know that it was happening. I would write and it would erase. I would write and it would erase. Until I got it just the way it wanted it to be. And I didn't understand why. It's only now going back that I'm starting to understand why. Because what it says is beyond the words that are on the page. The story it tells is only the beginning of the story of what it will tell if you allow it to enter you. So I can't recommend highly enough that people start to listen to the stories around them. Start to listen to other people. Start to take a moment during the course of your day to just ask a question to someone you don't know. And just take the time with them to listen to their answer. That's really the story of the mosaic. Mo in his search for heaven met up with all these characters, normal, ordinary people, a street worker, an artist, a trash man, a juice maker, a mirror maker, a gardener, common, ordinary people, not the standard archetypes that you think are the ones that lead you to heaven, But every single one of them, when he sat and listened to their story, left him seeing a different person than the one he saw before he came. And I believe that if we would take the time to listen to each other, what we would see would be remarkably different than what we saw coming in. And that's where innovation happens. That's where change happens. That's where miracles start to happen. That's where understanding happens. That's where kindness happens. That's where everything that we need in the world now exists. But we spend our time talking. Listen to me in this interview. I'm talking so much rather than listening. And I think I had to write this book because one day I'm going to learn how to listen more than I talk. But so be it.
What are you still uncertain about and what are you afraid of?
Oh, wow. I think I'm uncertain about everything. I think one of the big changes in my life is I went from feeling certain about everything to being uncertain about everything. What am I scared of? As hard as it is to actually hear myself say the word, I'm scared of intimacy because I've had so much pain in my life. I am married now. My wife passed away 18 years ago of the worst cancer a person could ever have. She spent the last 2.5 years of her life in blood-curdling, screaming pain, 45 minutes on, 45 minutes off, all day, all night. And I, the great white knight, was 2 inches away from her and couldn't take away 1 second of her pain. But at the end of 45 minutes, it went off for 45 minutes and she was fine. I'm scared of that happening again. I'm now remarried to one of the most exquisite women I've ever met. She's beautiful outside, but her beauty on the outside is not even comparable to how beautiful she is inside. Her gift is her ability to love. And she stands there just loving me, even when I push her away. Because I'm scared that if I love her and let her in, something bad will happen to her. Look at the story, look at the thoughts, look at the words, look at the stories, look at the life. I have to change that thought. Because if something bad happens, it might. But why keep somebody that I love so dearly at bay? Because I'm scared that something could happen to them. Because that's what's happened to other people that I've loved. I've lost them. And that pain for me has been so big that I would rather keep people away than bring people in close. And so I laugh at the guy with the big G on his sweatshirt that has me talking to people about connection. I feel like the least appropriate person in the world to share that message because it's what I'm most scared of. And so I remember the beauty of being at Hay House and seeing that the people wrote the books that they most needed to read, not the ones they knew. And I put myself happily in that clump of people because it should only happen that I learn how to connect to myself, to my God, to my source, to my purpose, and to each other. Those are the four connections essential for everybody living in this world.
Wow. Well, I think that makes a really, really thought-provoking end to a very, very, very insightful and deeply contemplative conversation. So I have one final question.
Beautiful.
Which is how we finish all of our interviews with the Unmistakable Creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Being themselves. I think in the world we live in today, I don't think I know anybody that's truly themselves. And I know a lot of people. And the messaging the world gives us is, copy this system and you will be successful. I just wrote a Facebook post today that by copying what other people do, we might become financially well-to-do, but we might not become content. I believe it's only when we can go inside of ourselves and we can get our answers from within us. And that doesn't matter if it's in a relationship with another human, with another person, your wife, your friend, your associates, if it's a business, if it's a government of a country, we have to be true to ourselves. And I think we've lost the ability to even know who ourselves is. I think we're scared to death to find who we are beneath, behind those walls, to touch. We've blockaded. I know I'm going to say for me, I've blockaded myself so much in my room, in my silo, because I'm so scared of the pain that I once felt. That pain has become exponentially bigger. I remember years ago, I did an experiment. I remember I had made pretend that a room in my house was the room that I put all my pain in. And I would keep putting that pain in that room all the time. I had an extra room and I just put it in there and I never opened the door. After years of having that room be there for only my pain, after being scared to death to open the door to that room, one day I just sat and I said, I'm going to open the door now. Do you know when I walked in the room, there was nothing in there? But I had spent years believing that I could never deal with the pain that was there. There was nothing in there because I wasn't the same person anymore that had put all those painful places in, and I couldn't even remember what they were anymore. If we could have the courage to just be ourselves, to go within rather than to live life from inside out rather than from outside in, to me, that would make somebody unmistakable because there's so few people around doing that.
Amazing. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share your story, your wisdom, and your insights with our listeners. This has been mind-blowingly cool. Where can people find out more about you, your work, and everything that you're up to?
Thank you. First of all, thank you so much for saying that, because you have no idea how much I respect you and how many people you've spoken to and how meaningful that is for you to say that to me, because you just touched me deeply with those words. So I want to thank you for that. People can find me, the easiest place, everything that I have is on themosaiconline.com. That's my website. And it's being added to all the time, but you can find all my social media. You can find my contacts. You can find my sort of approach to life. You can find how to get the book. You can do all of those things there. And that's the easiest place to do it.
And for everybody listening, we'll wrap the show with that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.